Hi. Today we have Philip in this lovely afternoon, speaking to us about creating modular UIs for offline content.
Thank you, Emanuele. Hello, everybody. My name is Philip Comento. I live in Vancouver, Canada. I work at Endless, and there I lead the desktop applications team. So that's what I'm going to be talking about, and I'll give you some background first on how it relates to Endless and the stuff that Jonathan talked about yesterday and Cosimo the day before yesterday. So a quick recap. At Endless, we want to bring computers to the next billion people who don't have one yet. And one important thing to note is that the next billion people may have unreliable internet or no internet at all, and that's a problem that we're trying to solve with our system. So I'm going to talk about some of the applications that we try to solve that with, and then I'll get more technical and talk about how we build those. Right, so what do many of us do with our computers? At least speaking for myself, we educate ourselves with online resources such as Wikipedia. We read blogs for entertainment, and blog post from one of the Google Summer of Code students happened to be at the top of this when I took the screenshot for this talk, but it was really interesting to see the intern talks on Friday at the end of the day and connect the actual people with all the blog posts that have been appearing on Planet GNOME. So I don't know if any of the interns are in this room, but thank you for your presentations. Another thing that we do is look at cat pictures, and we build GNOME. These are all things that require the internet or access to the internet, and so what we're trying to do at Endless, we think it should be possible even without a reliable connection. So building GNOME is entirely another story, and I'm not going to address it at all in this presentation. I won't pretend to have a solution for that, how to build GNOME without internet. But all the other activities that I mentioned are, they all are consuming content in one form or another. So that's what I do. We build applications for people to consume content without access to the internet. And I'm going to present the tools that we built in order to build those applications and give a peek inside the engine. So here are some examples of some of the apps that we built to display offline content and guide users through it. Some of them you already saw in the previous talks from Jonathan and Cosimo. These are all made with the tools that we've developed, but also, just as importantly, these are all GTK apps. They look quite different from many of the GTK apps that we're used to. And the tools have a bit more specific purpose than a general purpose toolkit like GTK. So for one thing, all these apps are quite similar. For another, they all rely heavily on design. And so when you're writing a normal GTK app, you rely on the work that the Advaita theme authors have done for you to determine how your app looks. And here we have a very specific theme in mind for each app. So our tools are taking that in mind. And lastly, this may be a bit surprising, we aim to write apps without writing any code. The less code you have to write for each app, the more content you can write apps for. What we've done is develop a set of modules, hence the title of the talk, Modular UIs. Modules, building blocks, you can pick them and assemble them into an app using a declarative language. So I'm sure at this point, some people are shaking their heads, muttering things like, oh, those poor naive souls with their declarative language. But this is a bit different. Of course, writing a general purpose toolkit or general purpose apps without writing code is kind of an unattainable goal, because code is what apps are made of. But it is within reach if you limit the sort of app that you write, which is what we're doing here. All our apps do basically two things. They let you search through offline content, and they guide you to browse through it. More screenshots, which I showed on the previous slide. So we've built a bunch of building blocks that are geared towards these two activities. They are modular, meaning that you can mix and match them and combine components. They're not specifically made for one app. They're different from widgets, which I will get to later in the talk. We describe them in a JSON declarative format, which is built to be understandable by computers and other tools, so that we can we can use tools to read and write it. Currently, the only tool that we use to read and write it is a preprocessor tool that allows us to write the declarative files themselves in a more human-readable format than JSON. But this is intentionally designed to be writable by other tools. For example, GUI Designer Tools, I put it in real small type because it doesn't exist yet. I mean, GUI Designer Tools do, but the ones that deal with this format don't. I'll give a little overview of some of the UI modules that we have. So we start with a window. There's really not much you can do with a window. It's an empty window. I think we only have one module like this. But you can add a number of pages. And I don't know if you can actually see that these are different colors. It's looking kind of washed out from here, but oh well. At its most basic, an app consists of a number of pages, and the pager switches between them. It's kind of like GTK stack. We have several different kinds of pagers that you can choose from. For example, there's a regular one, and there's a one with parallax, background scrolling, etc. Inside pages, you can put layouts. Layouts are similar to GTK containers. There's one actually quite interesting difference, which I'll get to in a moment. We have a box layout, which is very similar to GTK box. And in some cases, we just wrap a GTK widget all together. And then for the content itself, each unit of content is represented as it's a record in our database, and it's represented as what we call a card, which is these the smallest squares in the middle. So these cards are also GTK widgets, and are dynamically generated with they show the title of the piece of content and maybe a synopsis or something, depends on the context. And cards live inside an arrangement, and an arrangement is also like a GTK container, but it's deals with dynamically generated child widgets instead of ones that the app author puts in. Then there are also a bunch of UI modules that fall into the assorted miscellaneous category, and some that aren't even UI objects but deal more with the model side of the model view stuff. So I hear you thinking, show me some code, right? I really wish I could see, it was mirrored on here, but I understand from earlier speakers that that's not possible. But we'll do it as best we can. We write our UI modules in GJS. They are G objects with a couple of, we use them somewhat differently than G objects are often used. And on the right here is a sample of our human-readable YAML format. Type, for example, is the name of the UI module. This doesn't do anything by itself, but this is a snippet of a larger app description. The type is the name of a UI module. For example, up the top we've got layout.infinite scrolling. So that's a layout. I said before, layouts are kind of like GTK containers, and this one implements infinite scrolling. It does kind of what it says on the tin. We have properties, and those are GObject properties, but of course, in our UI definition file, we treat all the properties as if they were construct only because we don't write code. So even orientation is an actual GTK property that's inherited from GTK orientable, but we treat it in the UI definition file as if it can only be set once at the beginning. We have slots. This is what I was talking about earlier when I said that things are not quite GTK containers. Modules can contain other modules, but they all have to fit in slots, and slots are always named. For example, the infinite scrolling layout module has a slot named content, and that is basically the the big, you know, it can contain one other module, and that is the contents of the scrolled window. Some modules have more than one slot, and they have different names. So that's kind of what we use instead of GTK bin and GTK container. And then we have references. For example, the infinite scrolling layout. I mean, for infinite scrolling, you scroll down to the bottom of a scrolled window, and then you want to load more of whatever you put in the window. So it needs to know what it needs to load more of. And in this case, it has a reference named lazy load, and that points to another module, which is not in this snippet, with an ID of search results. So that says, OK, when you get to the bottom, you load more search results. And we have styles as well. You can add CSS classes to modules. And I'll get to theming in a moment. One thing that GObjects have, which we don't use in here, are signals, because no code, no signal handlers. So that's the structure of an application definition. Now we define the looks. So we use CSS because that's what GTK uses. And but of course, we got this trick from Advaita, but apparently none of the cool kids write CSS anymore. So we do just like Advaita does and write SCSS instead. So for those who aren't familiar with SCSS, it's a sort of a CSS preprocessor that lets you write stuff that is less annoying to write than CSS and compiles it down to actual CSS, which is what GTK consumes. It's probably one of the most popular tools to come out of web development. So for our CSS, we expose a number of things that theme writers can use as well. For simple customization, we expose a number of variables that control the fonts and the colors in an app if you just want to use the default, our default theme. So this is how you set variables in CSS or in SCSS, and then those are picked up and used throughout the rest of the CSS. So you can a couple of named colors, a couple of named fonts. And then, of course, you can write the actual SCSS as well. And so the names of the modules, the things that corresponded to type here, they have automatically generated CSS classes. You can also reference the styles that you added here. So for example, search results box up here about halfway down the top is a CSS class, which you can reference in here. And it appears at the top of this snippet. So you can make this either replace the default theme that we have for apps, or you can use SCSS to import the default theme and then add some augmentations like this to it. If you say, OK, I want it to look like the default, but I want to customize the colors, and I want the titles to be 2 points smaller, something like that. So here's what an app consists of. The declarative app description in YAML compiled down to a more machine-appropriate JSON format We have the theme in SCSS, which compiles down to CSS, which GTK consumes. We have things like images, so for the backgrounds, other assets, and logo or wordmark for the app. We put those in a GResource. We have the content. That's an entirely different story, which really requires its own talk. So I'm not really going to go into that, but in short, we have all the content sort of stuck in a random access file, and then we, for indexing and for searching, we use a Zapian database, which we can search. Zapian is, I believe it's known as sort of a document retrieval database. And so we use that for searching and indexing, and the actual content lives in a separate file. No code. of course, you know, I'm giving this presentation to a room that has, you know, maybe a couple of developers in it. So the idea is if you if you want to add components that we don't have in in our library of components, then you should be able to also add another UI module to your app and ship that along with it. We haven't actually done any of that yet because it's been closed up. We're the only one who's written apps for it so far. So if we want to add a component, we just add it to the framework. But will be extensible. And then, of course, all this goes into a Flatpak. And it runs against the runtime that we have on Endless OS, but we are planning to make a separate runtime for these offline content apps to run against. So I mentioned we were the only ones who had written these apps so far, but this library is open source as of about an hour ago. This is really exciting news. so this means now I'm really going to have to rush to make it actually consumable for everybody in this room and hurry up on that documentation. But you can go there now. EndlessM on GitHub EOS Knowledge Lib. And let's see, how much time do I have? Because I can show a quick demo. More than 10 minutes, great, okay. All right, so this is an example of our Prensa Libre app. Prensa Libre is a newspaper, so the foremost newspaper in Guatemala, I believe. And so you might ask, offline content, newspaper, how does that work? But this one, part of our system can download updates when the user has a connection. So you open it up and you might not always get fresh news, but if you do have a connection at some point, then the news will refresh itself. These are the cards that I was talking about. Let's see. It's really hard to do this while twisting my head up to look at the screen. But each one of these cards represents a document in our database. Here are more cards. They're a slightly different style. But that corresponds with different parameters in the app description file. So these things here, they're not literal boxes, but like here you've got three cards next to each other. That's an arrangement. Here you've got a big card and three small cards. That's a different arrangement. Those are defined in the app description file as well. We've got a menu up here, and these are actually also cards, except they don't look like cards. They look like links. But so, you know, cards can not just not represent just documents, but also collections of documents. You know, we can browse through these categories and see, you know, news about you know, national news, international news, and then, you know, we click on them and we read the news story. So, and then let me figure out how to get a terminal up on here, but it's not going on. Let's see. Okay, yeah. All right, so here's actually the code for what you just saw, and I guess this is, oh yeah, it is dragging. So YAML is a lot nicer format to read and write than, you know, JSON with endless curly braces. But yeah, we've got, like, this is, for example, the code for the menu. It's got, you know, banner.app, that was the word mark for Prensa Libre that was at the top left there. And, you know, we've got an arrangement that's named side by side, which showed the you know, the menu items side by side. And then the menu items themselves are card.title because they're only titles. And, you know, got properties here. And then, you know, this line, I didn't talk about selections because I didn't want to spend like 20 minutes just talking about each of the components, but you know, selections, you know, they're sort of the model to the view that I'm showing. So this says all sets filtered by sets that are featured, and you know, those are the cards that get created and displayed in the menu. And so this whole thing for the entire newspaper app is about 250 lines, I believe. Oh, it's a little more. Okay, about 300 lines. Yeah, I guess it's debatable whether writing a 300-line YAML file is code, but like I said, this is meant to be output by a GUI designer type thing as well. Anyway. Back to the presentation. Oh, on the wrong screen. You're kidding. Okay. Okay, I think I have to drag it on this one. Maximize. Okay, there we go. All right, so questions. No question. Oh, Alberto.
So that last app that you showed up, it basically synchronizes content from somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
Is the synchronization of the content also a facility within? I know it's not part of the talk, but I'm curious. Is the synchronization part of the content management also a given thing for the app developer? Is that something he can count on?
What do you mean by a given thing?
So, in the same way that I'm given this toolkit to do content-driven app, do I get the pieces of the infrastructure I need to publish new content, and the synchronization, is it done for me, or is that logic that you had to add specifically for, like, the other way to ask the question is, does every app that does synchronization with the content have to have its own logic, given that there might be different sources, or?
I see. Yeah, that's a part of the system that is not really worked out yet, how it's going to be exposed to app developers. So right now, it can only synchronize the content from our servers. But you don't have to provide your own code to do the synchronization. Whether that's going to be something that you publish yourself, I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that right now. But yeah.
So you showed this YAML file which outputs JSON and so on. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that the idea is that a UI designer tool would like output the YAML file.
No, it would output the JSON file.
Okay, so yeah. Do you have a UI designer tool like that, or are you still writing it by hand? Or
We don't have that yet. Of course, there's Glade. that's one option that we are thinking of. So the idea is to have a GUI designer tool that will output JSON, but we don't have it yet. Any other questions? No?
Well, okay. Thank you, Philip.
I got two other things to show. One shameless plug. I'm organizing a BOF session for GJS on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons. I mentioned that we write all our stuff in GJS, so I'm actually really quite interested in talking with other people who use GJS and where should GJS go? How can we make it more attractive to all those people who use Node, for example? And then shameless plug too, if you want to work on this, here's where to go, jobs.lever.co/endless. Thanks.